Coming up this time, memories of Brian Clough before his managerial success.
And then suddenly he would ignite, he would light up when the ball came into the box. And then all the criticisms of him were just null and void. He could head, he could climb, he had speed over three or four metres. Everything changed when he was in the box.
There are stories of the boyhood hero and the young fan who kept a collection of newspaper cuttings.
If ever you want an example of hero worship, it was me to Brian as a player. I used to try and kick the ball like him. I used to try and walk like him to school, you know, with my satchel on my back, everything.
Plus the manager who had a big influence on a young Cloughy.
When he did move to Sunderland, which was a real shock for all of us, his reasoning was Alan Brown. It was the manager. His reasoning was that this man I can work for, I trust him, and I really believe in him. And I think that's interesting, you know, that he went for the strong pull was the personality of the manager.
He used to get one or two goals every season, give or take 30.
Hi, this is Nigel Jempson here in the Green Jumper podcast.
I don't think the strikers are getting hurt enough. Now, that might sound silly because nobody wants anybody hurt, but you've got to get hurt to get a goal.
You're listening to the Green Jumper podcast with myself, Marcus Alton, the editor of the Tribute website, brianclough.com. And it's always great to speak to some of the people who come along to the live Green Jumper events. And one of my presentations was at Arnold Library in Nottingham, and that's where I met Jeff Redman, who has some special memories of Brian Clough as a player. And I'm delighted to say Jeff joins us on the line now. Thanks for being with us today, Jeff.
Absolutely delighted to be with you. It's very sobering to go over all those years and remember what it was like standing on the terraces at Middlesbrough. But yes.
I bet. Well, we look forward to hearing all about it. And looking back to that, to those days, of course, as Clough, as a centre forward at Middlesbrough, what are your first memories, if you can remember, of seeing Brian play?
Always was his good behaviour on the pitch. There was no doubt about it. He was like a model player. That's my memory. We have to say that. I'm talking as a 9, 10, 11-year-old young boy, and he was my hero. If ever you want an example of hero worship, it was me to Brian as a player. I used to try and kick the ball like him. I used to try and walk like him to school, you know, with my satchel on my back, everything. And I used to write his signature, you know, he used to create his signature in free periods when we were at school or when the teacher wasn't looking. But my memories, I've thought about this for the podcast. My memories were of his behaviour, his long raking passes from midfield, because he had this tremendous shot and foot and accuracy with his right foot. So the long passes out to the wings where the two wingers, mainly Eddie Holliday and Billy Day, would pick up the ball from him. But then also that where he would go out of the game for quite long periods of time. And then suddenly he would ignite, he would light up when the ball came into the box. And then all the criticisms of him were just null and void. He could head, he could climb, he had speed over three or four metres. Everything changed when he was in the box. And interestingly, going through all my cuttings, he must have had an innate sense of the goalkeeper's positioning and the crosses as they came in, what would happen. The number of pictures I've got of him hovering over the goalkeeper, the number of memories I've got of him scoring a goal where the goalkeeper pushed it out, or the goalkeeper, we used to say dropped it. I don't think they dropped it. I think that the ball came too hard for them and they just patted it down. But he was able to get in there and score goals.
I guess he was like the Gary Lineker of his time in that it was such a good goal poacher.
That's an excellent, in my mind, that's an excellent equivalent. So Gary, you know, he would just be there and he would be tapping in. You know, very rarely was he, but Brian could shoot as well. I mean, some of the goals I remember were I hope I've got it right, but, you know, there was one match against Bristol Rovers, and it seemed to be that he was almost just inside the halfway line, and his shot must be like, you know, 40, 45. They did say 45 yards in the Evening Gazette, and it just went into the top corner. He could just do that special thing. But of course, I think Gary Lineker was a little bit more mobile.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hero worship. That's what you're going to hear from me.
And I was going to ask, actually, as a youngster, idolising Brian, did you manage to speak to him or meet him when you were a youngster?
No, I would be too frightened. I used to stand outside Ayresome Park and wait for him to come past, but I would never dare go and speak to him. The closest I got to it was my son-in-law took a picture of Brian, which was one of my favourite pictures. It still hangs in the lounge.
Wow.
And it's one of him scoring a goal at Middlesbrough, and Brian signed it to me, but that's the closest I got. When he used to sit in the newsagent shop.
Yes.
West Bridgeford.
In Nottingham. Yeah.
In Nottingham. And when he was finished playing, and my son-in-law got it signed for me. So it hangs in on the wall. He's scoring a third goal against Bristol City, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Well, one of your other cuttings that you've sent through to me, December 59, I think, and he's scoring in a 3-0 win against Rotherham. And the report says Taylor had another sound game in goal. And, of course, that refers to Peter Taylor. They became great friends and close colleagues. Another cutting you've got is the team picture at Middlesbrough with Clough on the front row and Taylor just behind him. That must bring back some special memories for you as well.
Oh, absolutely. I can name the team. It's strange how I can name that team, but I probably can't remember name Forest's team at the last, you know. I'm a Forest fan now, by the way.
Yes.
And I probably can't name their team, but I can name that team and remember how they were playing, how they played. And, you know, I was 11, I think, at that. Yeah, Peter Taylor. He was a very commanding player, actually, in the box.
Right.
And he had the one feature he had was an incredible throw. He rarely kicked the ball out, and he used to throw the ball with tremendous accuracy. In fact, he didn't like it when he could kick. So already, he was thinking about building from the back.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, but Peter was a really sound player, but never quite accepted by the management, you know, as becoming the first team goalkeeper. Yeah. But really highly thought of by the crowd and very, very sound and very commanding in the box.
Yes. Of course, Cloughy became quite a sought-after striker, really, in those days. And a brilliant cutting that you've found. It has the headline, "We'll report Clough anglers to the league." And it's a transfer controversy, really, saying that Borough are not happy being linked with, transfers to other clubs for Cloughy. And Bob Dennison, the manager, is quoted as saying, "This has gone on for too long. All this rumour and counter-rumour can be the most unsettling thing possible for a player. We're victims of a backroom, or should I say boardroom conversation, which mushrooms into a tremendous story with no foundations at all. We've heard nothing officially from Nottingham." And that's because Forest apparently were being linked to him for £45,000.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they must have been, well, they called it angling, didn't they, I think, in the late 50s. And, you know, they were putting it out. It was the controversy. I've become more conscious of the controversies through going through these cuttings in anticipation for today.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you know, I don't think I was as a young boy. I obviously didn't want him to leave. And every season it was whether he would sign a new contract, would he stay? And he obviously, I can see now that he had real ambition. You know, his ambition was beyond Middlesbrough, and he wanted to. But yet, when he did move to Sunderland, which was a real shock for all of us, his reasoning was Alan Brown. It was the manager. His reasoning was that this man I can work for, I trust him, and I really believe in him. And I think that's interesting, you know, that he went for the strong pull was the personality of the manager. Yeah, and I think, yes. You know, kind of, yeah, really, really important. Now, I found one where it was linking him to an Italian club as well, which I'd forgotten all about, which would have been quite interesting, you know, following Jerry Hitchens, Jimmy Greaves, Dennis Law, and all those players that had sort of failed, really, on the continent, as we call it then.
Yes.
But I didn't realise Brian had been linked to Milan, I think it was. Always people were saying, but nobody's come for him. Nobody's come for him. And they're asking 65,000, but nobody wants him. I think it was always a double-edged sword, wasn't he? You want him, but on the other hand, you want what will he be doing in the dressing room?
a controversial figure. And it must have caused more controversy, really, that he went to the local rival Sunderland.
Yes,
How did that go down locally at the time?
Oh, I think we were all, a lot of regret. I mean, a lot of people, my memory was that a lot of people were happy to see him go. Mm. You know, people who were, you know, less fanatical about him than I was, certainly than I was. And they were a little bit pleased that at least something had been resolved.
Yeah.
We didn't quite know how we'd fill the gap. But at Sunderland, they were a big spending club at that time. And they were a club that was clearly going to go places with Alan Brown. And, of course, they had this wonderful George Hurd and Charlie Hurley. Yeah. Charlie Hurley was a really wonderful centre-half for Era and for Sunderland as well. In fact, Brian, I think I'm right, Brian only got one goal against him in all the time they played Middlesbrough versus Sunderland.
Yeah.
He found it very difficult to play against Charlie Hurley. He was an enormous figure at the centre of the Sunderland defence. Right. But what you're asking me is, it did go down. I used to go up occasionally to see him, I went back after the dreadful injury and managed to see his first game back when he hit the post, and it was a 2-2 draw. Everybody was on tenterhooks. We didn't know whether he was going to get injured or not. We were all worried about him, more worried about him than we were wanting him to score in a way.
He said his happiest times as a centre-forward were at Sunderland, but of course that awful injury came on Boxing Day 1962. Were you there that day?
No. I'm pleased I wasn't, really.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there, but I've watched endless that same clip. It was Harker, wasn't it? Chris Harker.
That's it, the goalkeeper. Yeah,
and again, those who didn't like Brian as a player would say, oh, well, he's always going in too hard on the keeper. You know, I'm not really surprised. He goes in too hard. For those who do like him, you know, he was poaching and he was seeking that first chance he could get. Yeah. Now, I wasn't there. It was a dreadful day. His record that season, he was surely going to be the top, and he was going to take Sunderland up. It was the number of goals that season was phenomenal, and everybody was talking about him. And he had, this is the controversy, isn't it? Again, not controversy, but a dilemma. Did Brian ever get his full service and the kind of service that suited him? He would tell you not.
Well, he always had a bit of a go at some of the players at Middlesbrough, didn't he, before?
Yeah.
Because they were conceding too many goals. And obviously that didn't go down well with his teammates. And I think there was some sort of round-robin letter to take the captaincy off him.
There was. And that really upset a young boy of 10. I couldn't believe it, that they wanted rid of him. They wanted him out of the team. Now, my brother... I have two brothers. They might both come into these stories.
Yeah.
But my brother worked at W.H. Smith. And, you know, in those days, he used to do big exhibitions of books or whatever book had just come out. And one of the books was Hotbed of Soccer. It's about the Northeast by Arthur Hopcraft. And he did a display and he got Brian lent him the two caps that he got for England, and they were in the window with all the other things. And within a month, Brian had come back and said, you're not having them all this time. You've had them long enough. I want them back. My brother was only about 18. You know, he'd done this beautiful display in the shop window, you know. The story was that I was going to tell you was that my brother found out that it was a player called Ray Billcliffe who was the right back. And he led the round robin against Brian. And he was never very popular after that with the Middlesbrough crowd. No. Billcliffe always got booed. But what I will say, that match after, I can remember almost every, I think I can, accurately, after the round robin, which really upset me, and I didn't know what, I went in to the match, so I think I went on my own that day, just on my own as a 10-year-old, in the Bob End to watch that match. He got three goals. And they were absolutely marvellous goals. He just walked back and shook hands with all the players. I can remember it now. You know, he just put his hand out and shook hands and then went back to the centre circle, ready for the kickoff.
Well, there'll be more memories from Jeff later on, including the time Cluffy scored five goals in a 9-0 win. But I just wanted to mention that the Green Jumper has received national recognition at a prestigious awards event. The pod was highly commended at the UK Independent Podcast Awards for 2025. It was among the top two podcasts in the sports category. The judges said they were impressed by how the pod was still uncovering new stories about Brian Clough, and that was a real testament to the research and dedication behind the show. And I thought I'd take this opportunity to play a segment from the award entry. It included part of my interview with the photographer John Sumpter, who captured many iconic images of Cluffy over the years. Here he is talking about returning from Wembley on the team coach.
So I was actually sitting behind Brian Clough, who had his own seat, right next to Albert the driver. And Cluffy was selecting the music as we drove out of the... Buddy Holly, that was it. I always think of Buddy Holly. When Albert put a tape in and he put Buddy Holly on. And as we drove out the tunnel on the coach, that was playing Buddy Holly tune. So we set off up the motorway and it was heaving with traffic. So we were crawling along. But it was very entertaining, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. And did you manage to have a chat with Cluffy at all on the coach?
I was talking to him, not with him, and I got told to shut up on certain terms. He'd put me off the bus if I talked anymore. So I thought I'd better be discreet, and I moved to the back of the coach where all the players were making a row and having a few drinks and sat with them and took, as you can see, took photographs with them waving the cup and looking very happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How did you come to actually get on the team coach? Because he was quite selective, wasn't he, on who he allowed to travel with the team?
Yes, well, I'd gone down with the commercial office on the staff coach and had lunch with them at the hotel right next to Wembley Stadium. They won the game and I got in the dressing room, as I said, and finished taking photographs, and Cluffy turned to me and said, "How did you get here, young man?" And I said, "I came down with the office staff," and said, "Would you like to come back with the team?" Well, as a Forest fan, there are not many invitations like that. So get yourself on the bus. So I ended up sitting right behind him and was chattering away and got told to shut up, as I said.
But you took the opportunity to go to the back of the bus. And yeah, as we've seen now in the archives, some fantastic photos with the players. Now, there's another one that goes back to about 1980, a really famous one, with Cluffy wearing what is actually a bag saying Big Head, and he's wearing it on his head. You took this one. He's sitting next to Peter Taylor. What's the background to that?
Right, well, I was given the opportunity to go down and take some pictures of Peter Taylor and Brian Clough as a test to see if I was up to the quality was fine, because they were looking for another photographer. So I got down at the designated time and ushered into the boardroom, and Clough and Taylor were sat there, and they just won the league. So it's 78. So the league trophy's there. So I did shots of them, and their families as well, actually, I think I seem to remember. Then Cluffy suddenly appeared with this Big Head hat. It's a hat or a bag.
Yes.
So he's got that on his head. So that was referring to old Big Head. So I passed the test, and Peter Taylor said, "This could be the biggest break you've ever had." Not realising I was going to be there for 40-odd years, so,
Now, you were actually invited into Cluffy's back garden for a photo and ended up with a great photo that you've really kept as a treasured memory yourself. What happened?
Right, well, I was summoned, as usual, by Clough's secretary, Carol, to be at the boss's house Sunday. And they'd got the Littlewoods Cup and the Simod Cup. So I'd done some photographs of Brian with his family and the cups. And I thought, oh, I wouldn't mind one of these myself, actually. So I got my camera on a tripod and I asked Simon, who's Nigel Clough's brother, to take the photograph. So he took a picture of me standing next to Brian Clough, and Cloughy actually passed me the Littlewoods Cup and said, you hold the cup, I'll hold the Simod Cup. So I've nearly got the cup in front of my face, which when Brian saw it, said, you nearly ruined that look. Yeah. But he signed the photograph, he put, John, lots of love, Brian. And that's on his back garden, looks like a football pitch, doesn't it behind?
It's fantastic. And there he's in his white top and white shorts.
Football shorts and his white trainers. And you think he used to live in those shorts, actually. Apart from when I did go another time.
Yes.
When he got his OBE from the Queen at Buckingham Palace. And again, I was asked to be at his house on the Monday morning. And I was all dressed up in his morning suit, top hat, with his award pinned to his lapel. And his wife was there, did family photographs. And he actually introduced me to Barbara, who I'd never met before. I said, this is John, he's a proper photographer. The other photographer is Trevor, he's just from the post. Right. So, which went down well.
Had a bit of a laugh,
So there's a nice smiley picture of Brian on his back lawn with a top hat. But he didn't actually have any photographs taken at Buckingham Palace, apparently, which I read in the paper. So it was a nice exclusive for me again.
But another photo, which I didn't realise you'd taken, and it's really become iconic now, the 91 Cup final, where he's being introduced to Princess Diana. And he's shaking hands with her, and he's got both hands clasped round hers. You must be very proud of that.
Well, I am, because I was that close to them in the centre circle. I could actually hear the conversation. And Cloughy's got a rosette saying the world's greatest grandpa pinned on his lapel. And while he's holding her hand and gazing into her eyes, she said, oh, world's greatest grandpa, is that true? And he went, yes, beauty, it is.
Some great memories from the photographer John Sumpter there, helping the Green Jumper receive more acclaim, this time at the UK Independent Podcast Awards. And you can hear the full interview with John in episode 75, called Picture Perfect. Now back to today's guest, Jeff Redman, and his memories of Cloughy as a player. In fact, looking back to August 1958, when Brian was made captain at Middlesbrough and scored 5 in a 9-0 win over Brighton.
It was such an easy game, and all the crowd were just saying, oh, these young Brighton, really, and they've just come up. They're an inexperienced team. I can't remember it really well, but obviously I was highly delighted.
Yes. Yeah. I know that afterwards he was asked by the a reporter about the 5 goals, and with a twinkle in his eye, he said the responsibility of being captain had held him back, which is typical Cloughy, isn't it? five goals.
Red hot Clough. When the round robin was building and getting to its peak, as it were, the trouble in the dressing room at Middlesbrough. One of my brothers had to went on a weekly visit to the hospital, Middlesbrough General Hospital.
Yeah.
And they used to all meet at Ria's Cafe after training, and you talk about it. Yeah. And he used to tell me as a small boy, in the cafe you could see Peter Taylor and Brian on one side and all the other players on the other side of the cafe. You know, the same thing that you describe in writing.
Yes.
He was witness to that on a weekly basis, because he had to go to the hospital on a weekly basis at that time.
Wow, yes.
And of course, it's Chris Rea's cap, isn't it? It's the famous Chris Rea.
It is, yeah, the family cafe, yes. Yeah, and that's where, of course, Clough and Taylor would meet and discuss football, and that's how that big relationship developed. Just coming back to his Sunderland days after he moved there, and that, as we say, that terrible injury, another cutting you've got of him I've never seen before. He's actually in the orthopaedic hospital in Sunderland listening to the commentary of Sunderland's match at Preston in the FA Cup, sharing headphones with a nurse. And obviously it must have been set up for the photographer to take that picture, but that was incredible. I mean, did you make lots of cuttings, cutting out of the papers and sticking in a scrapbook?
Yeah, I did loads of them, yeah. That wasn't very long after the injury, was it?
No.
Because he was still in recovery at that point. So, yeah, that, I really got an emotional adolescent for him. I was watching his recovery more than I was the matches or what Middlesbrough were doing.
Yes.
And after about 2 years, when he'd been told he couldn't play again, he tried and then retired.
Yeah.
They offered him a week on... the equivalent of East Midlands Today. And he actually had a week doing that, hosting it. Look North Newcastle, it was called then, or BBC. And but he wasn't very successful. He didn't quite have the technique at that stage that he began to develop later when he went on ITV.
Yes, that is interesting. Yes, because of course he became a great TV pundit and interviewee in later years. Yeah, and just looking also at another cutting that you sent through here, talking about that Sunderland time and the injury. Yeah. It's a momentous cutting where he actually admits his playing career is over after advice from specialists. As a young fan, how did you feel then?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I didn't know what was going to happen, you know, the gap and the sadness of loss. Because obviously I thought he should be England player. Of course I did.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it should be the international. He should be with Greaves and Charlton and those kinds of names. But I'm not sure that's true. But that's what I believed. That's what my passion was. And it felt dreadful when I was reading all of that. And Alan Brown's statements about it, you know, the manager.
Yes.
Yeah, it was absolutely devastating.
From that terrible injury, not being able to play, eventually developed this wonderful managerial career. And you're in Nottinghamshire now. How did you follow his managerial career?
Very, very closely when he was at Hartlepool, because that was obviously for obvious reasons.
And
I couldn't believe what he was doing, what he was achieving. The players he was bringing in, we all know John McGovern is one, but he was bringing in players who... Les Green, I remember, and people that we hadn't heard of, people from Burton Albion, where Peter Taylor was the manager. He was bringing in one or two players from there, and then he would bring in somebody else. What he was achieving at Hartlepool was quite astonishing, because we were used to Hartlepool having to apply for re-elect, you know, get bottom of the fourth division as it was then. And suddenly, you know, they were moving up that division. They were moving up. It was incredible. So then Derby, and obviously the events at Derby, we couldn't help it. I mean, there were national events where everybody was wondering what was going to happen next and how long was he going to stay. And he was bringing people from Hartlepool to Derby.
Yeah.
And suddenly we realised, what this man's got something really special as a manager. Somebody wanted John McGovern and he demanded something like 65,000 for him. And then as soon as he went to Derby, he offered 25 or 30,000 for John McGovern within a couple of weeks. You know, it was brash, but it was unexpected, wasn't it? It was a total unexpected behaviour all the time.
So unpredictable. Yes.
And I followed that, and then fortunately, I got a job back in Nottinghamshire, and my daughter said she really wanted to go to the match to see Forest play. And that was it, right? So, but I didn't go to the European years. I was watching that from a distance. But from about 1983, I've missed very few home games at Forest.
Yes.
But you know that.
Yeah. And of course, he rebuilt several Forest sides in those 80s. You know,
absolutely.
Developed England internationals. It was regular top 10 finishers as well. Annual Wembley trips. Did you go on any Wembley trips?
Yes. Well, I went to the Luton.
Yeah.
And went to Oldham. Yeah, I remember we were standing and the coach came past and there he was right in the front of the coach and all the players. We were cheering. And then as soon as Cluffy came past, hands down. Frightening my sister. Stop making so much noise.
Yes, that commanding presence always had its effect, definitely. Well, Jeff Redmond, thanks ever so much for sharing your memories from all those years ago. And just finally, how will you remember Brian?
Obviously, great player. Genius in terms of man management, I think, more than anything else. But I don't see how you can separate man management really from the beauty, really, of his teams that went on to win in Europe. They were so beautiful, balanced teams that reflected him. Amazing achievement.
Yes, yes. And I think it's wonderful that you've got that memento as well of the picture as a Middlesbrough player and personally signed as well, something for you to cherish these days.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you ever so much, Jeff. It's been lovely talking to you.
And you. Bye-bye.
And you can see some of Jeff's archive cuttings at brianclough.com. Just click on the podcast page. Don't forget, you can also buy my Cloughy books on the website and I'll sign them personally for you as well. And you can get 15% off Brian Clough The Lost Tapes by using the code GREEN15 at checkout. Thanks for listening and I hope you can join me again next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.